This is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County, welcoming you to the August edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly interview show, the second Monday of each month on WPKN 89.5 FM, bringing you news and information about the arts and culture across coastal Fairfield County. Throughout this pandemic, when virtually all cultural institutions and venues have been shuttered, a few have responded to the call to be as creative as possible and to find new ways of reaching their audiences with new forms of their programming, as well as to respond to many of the issues of the moment. One of the most notable of these has been an extraordinary and unique arts and culture venue on the Western Road on the outskirts of Westport, Beechwood Arts and Innovation. An 1806 restored farmhouse with a 300-year-old beech tree that have together formed a crucible for the arts and a home to the visual art and performances of countless numbers of artists and creative souls since the founding of Beechwood Arts in 2011 by internationally renowned pianist Frederick Chu and cutting-edge innovation specialist Janine Esposito, both of whom join me today. Welcome to you both.
Hi, David.
Great to David. Be here. Thanks for having us.
Well, Beechwood has really shown its mettle this year, first by its response to the blackout on arts and cultural events and gatherings imposed by the pandemic, and then by its response to the killing of George Floyd and the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement, and the sense that the time had perhaps finally come for the world to take on the issues of police brutality and the endemic and often unconscious racism that we and our institutions suffer from. Well, today our focus is on Beechwood as this crucible of arts and innovation, and in particular, Amplify, a two-week festival celebrating and amplifying the voices of Black artists and performers that Beechwood produced over the last 2 weeks of June. So first, Frederick and Jean, can you tell us a little bit first about yourselves and how you came to create Beechwood?
Well, I'm a concert pianist. I play all over the world. I've played in all 50 of the United States and DC and Puerto Rico, so I've made my way around quite a bit. I'm also a recording artist and just recorded my 30th CD. And I've been in Connecticut in the Westport area for 20 years.
So I, as you called me, an innovation specialist. I've been described as an innovation pioneer, probably because I started doing innovation about 25 years ago, before very many people even used the word. Most of that time was spent in my own business. I used to work for Unilever, and then I created a business around innovation, helping global Fortune 100 companies innovate their business models, how they do business, products, services. And now I've taken that business to the public sector, and I'm focusing on universities, libraries, a lot of work with libraries across the country as they transform, and also arts and nonprofit organizations. I also am an exhibiting visual artists. And I've shown in all different places around the country. So,
in terms of Beechwood, it's an arts nonprofit that I created when I came back from living in France. I came to the States and wanted to do some innovative things, particularly at that moment in workshops and kind of educational outreach type things. And then in 2011, Janine and I, by chance, happened upon this amazing property. And all of a sudden, this kind of fantasy idea that we had had since being together of creating a venue where we could bring arts across genres together, where we could bring generations together, where we could really have very kind of an experimental ground for artistic collaboration. We saw this place, we saw the copper beech tree, which now actually you said 300. We now think it possibly is 400 years
Oh
old,
my gosh.
Which is quite significant. Yeah. There's a lot of some documentation on that.
It has such a tremendous presence. It's
absolutely and
extraordinary.
It kind of hypnotized us and made us buy this place and start a life as a cultural venue. And kind of a crucible. This is the physical crucible for a lot of the work that we've done over the years since 2011.
So it's interesting that Janine, you're, if you like, a professional innovator. And Frederick, you also, as a pianist, as a musician, are also very innovator in terms of your engagement with technology. Could you just say a little bit about your interest in technology?
Yes, well, I've been a Yamaha artist for 30 years. And in that time, Yamaha has really developed many different ways to integrate technology into this centuries-old instrument with centuries of legacy, which is the piano. And I've been following all of that and helping as an advisor, as a tester of the equipment. And I've found a lot of extremely interesting and compelling artistic reasons to experiment with the piano. Pianos that play back, pianos that where you can silence it and go to headphones, pianos that don't have strings, pianos where the soundboard is amplified electronically to create huge sounds from a tiny instrument. All of these things offer different opportunities for the artistic experience, and I've been experimenting with that a lot.
So, so you really adopted what we call a salon model, in which you invite people to the house and pull together different disciplines.
Yeah, I mean, so
how did the program evolve?
Yeah. So basically, what we were imagining is, because Frederick's a musician, I'm an artist, we're both innovators, that's at the core, what connects our souls is just being curious in life and innovating and always having ideas and then crazily doing them. We really wanted to bring all the arts together. We really felt like this next era of life, the 21st century, was going to be about collaboration. It was going to be about a mix of everything. Uh-huh. And we, as artists, thought it would just be amazing if we had this kind of space. But the other thing is to not have the artists and performers in their own space and the audience in their own space, but break that wall as well. Mm-hmm. And so what we did was we organized it kind of like the old-fashioned salons, but with this idea of in bringing innovation to overlay on top of that, to give people these completely immersive experiences. So they come here, they experience music, art, film, performance, even the culinary experience of it, we tie into the theme. And I think the most important part of it is not just to have an extravaganza, but to do this around meaningful themes that resonate with community. And we add to the mix of the arts and the inspiration this intimate venue, and we always have community conversation, and the themes are meaningful. The themes are resilience, giving voice, taken really from whatever's going on immediately. We have
so engagement
totally
is an important part of what you do.
Yep, it's about community and conversation and collaboration all around these meaningful themes, and that's what really drives it. We don't ever have an art show for the sake of having an art show or a concert just isolated without any connection to anything. And we have these four seasons now a year, each one with a meaningful theme, each one with art, music, and conversation, that we have some conversations around a dinner table now with another kind of event that we've added, and
so,
also workshops.
So then came COVID this spring. You had your plans, I'm sure, for a spring season. But in many ways, I mean, you remarkably went virtual. I mean, you've had a lot of experiments with technology, but you really kind of bit the bullet and developed this series of online salons. Tell us a little bit about how those were created and how they evolved as you were doing them.
Yeah, well, first of all, we should start by saying our winter event ended with a 400 person concert at the Westport Library, who hosted our winter event, on March 5th. By March 15th, everything was closed. And so we were not planning to do our spring event right then. We were planning on taking a breather.
Right.
But of course, as soon as COVID hit, we thought back to after the 2016 election, everyone was divided and social media was very divided, if you remember. I mean, it continues, but we at that time did our first WE event in 2016. We had a completely virtual live performance. We had amazing musicians come and collaborate with Frederick and do a concert, and people had other people gather with them in their homes because we wanted to reach as many people as we could. We wanted it to be a non-political, gather everyone together. We're all, you know, to focus what we called it the WE event because we wanted to put the WE back in social media, which was really getting to be more about me. And that was the essence of where that started. So when this happened, again, it came to us that how can we create a feeling of we, a feeling of community. And so we took that original WE event and changed it a little bit so that it was really had a lot of elements, all the elements we usually have in our
sessions. For us, you know, innovation is in our name, and we had already experimented with the idea of a salon around the world where we connected salons, intimate salons that were happening in different parts of the globe together to have the simultaneous experience. So the idea of streaming, the idea of being connected through electronics was not foreign to us, and we were already exploring it. And as with many COVID effects, it accelerated our exploration of that. And I think that allowed us to have the perhaps the kind of blind confidence that we could do it. And so we announced right away for a month of weekly programs.
Wow.
You're
used to being on a quarterly schedule. You spend a lot of time preparing for quarterly events.
Yes.
So it seemed very ambitious for you to go on to weekly schedule.
You know, the COVID was so dramatic for everyone. And
right. For
us, being connected to the community and trying to reflect the needs of the community through an artistic lens, we just felt that we had to do something. We couldn't just sit around and just experience it with everybody else and not do anything. And so we put this idea out there, and of course nobody between us says no. And so we went out and announced it. And we were very simple and clear. We were going to do a weekly live broadcast from Beechwood with interviews and clips and performances. And all of a sudden we turned to each other and said, okay, how are we going to do this?
Yeah.
And we explored a lot. We had four kind of themes that we put on each of the shows. The first one was resilience, as we were all experiencing some call to being resilient.
We wanted to follow the trajectory of what was happening. So the first thing was, okay, we all need to be resilient.
Our second theme was homebodies and this turning to self and turning to home, everybody being at home and being more focused on those issues. The third one was global embrace and how all of us were connected, literally connected globally through this pandemic experience. And then the fourth one was transformation, which was what we were all going through, some very deep, deep transformations. And we had a fifth, which was coming out of COVID,
Would have been
which
premature
would have
had we
been
done it.
which would have been very premature, but at the time it seemed, it was like a month off. And we also experienced a tragedy in Janine's family. An uncle of hers died from COVID, and so we had to cancel that. And so and then of course things kind of hunkered down even more, and so we had to react in different ways personally to the
That
tragedy.
was extraordinary. So if you're just joining us, this is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County with our August edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly interview show on WPKN 89.5 FM. Today, we're talking with Janine Esposito and Frederick Chu, co-founders of Beechwood Arts and Innovation, a unique arts and culture venue on the outskirts of Westport. Our focus today is on Beechwood and the Amplify series, a 2-week festival celebrating and amplifying the voices of Black artists and performers that Beechwood produced over the last 2 weeks of June this year. So you are doing these weekly WE events, these live broadcasts, every, was it Wednesday?
Every Wednesday,
Yeah,
yeah.
and just to say that the there are not only live. Frederick did a world premiere of a piece that was written for the doctor who tried to alert the world.
Dr. Li Wenliang in China, who was one of the early people who sounded the alarm and who was one of the early victims of the virus as well. My friend Gao Ping, who's a very well-known composer, was hunkered down in Beijing, and he wrote this piece in memory of Dr. Li Wenliang and could not get it performed because everybody was sheltered in place, and sent it to me, and I contacted my brother, who's a violinist, first violinist in the Chicago Symphony. He was just sitting at home because the symphony was out of commission, and we developed a way. And this was early on in the whole process, before a lot of these collaborative online things started happening. And so we developed a way to communicate back and forth, and we created a live plus virtual world premiere of that on one of the WE events.
So we got a lot of things done. I mean, and it was interactive with the audience. Everything we did had the audience interacting, which so that's worth pointing out because we tried to make it like they were here.
And then, as you said, things turned quite dark. I mean, to start with, Janine, you lost your aunt.
My aunt
Your
and
uncle, I'm
uncle both
sorry.
had COVID. They went to two separate hospitals. He died. She was still in the hospital, and Frederick and I actually took on the job of zooming the wake and the funeral to all of his siblings and granddaughter and other family members who could not attend or be there. So that's why we could not do the fifth week.
Right. And then in May 25th, George Floyd is murdered by police in Minneapolis, and the country erupts, exploding in anger at this, the latest murder of black people by police. And then, and as we know, it followed Ahmaud Arbery in February and Breonna Taylor in March. The country had had enough, it seems. So I'm curious what went through your heads at this point. You've done the series, you were very actively engaged with the community, and then this happened.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we were horrified. I mean,
Yeah.
we were horrified along with the rest of the world watching that video of George Floyd. And our thoughts immediately went to the black community that we have engaged here and has engaged with us for the last 10 years. And we had a number of artists and
Right.
performers who have been here and who are we consider friends. And you know, we saw a lot of the statements coming out that organizations were making, and we just felt that our connection was more personal than that, and that we felt that wouldn't be enough for what right. we were feeling. And so we also, even though we had a relationship with the Black community, artistic arts community, we didn't know exactly what was needed, what was necessary, where they were. So we just started making phone calls and having conversations, one-on-one conversations with people about what would be good, what would be helpful, you know, who would it include, what would it be like? And that's how we developed the idea of Amplify, because what we felt was we have resources here at Beechwood. How can we put them to use in a way that's going to help you, that's going to help the effort, that's going to bring the Black Lives Matter issues somewhere? And that's kind of was the goal.
It seems that we talk about venues as performance spaces where people come together, but you are more than a venue, it seems, that you've always been more of a forum in which people bring their ideas, and there's a lot of discussion, and in terms of your engagement with the quote-unquote audience.
Right.
Yeah. So here you were basically producing something with those who have been performing at your space for, as you said, almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Yes, and you know, as with the We event, you know, we have our fingers in the community, and we reflect that, and we want to be a place where that is reflected. And so this diversity became the, you know, the diversity of Fairfield County, if not the diversity of Westport itself. You know, we also feel that the arts are the perfect way to enter into perhaps some difficult conversations or subject matter, because the arts are the arts. They're accepted, and there's a kind of a protective force around that as artistic creation, but that can lead directly to community conversation, which is.
And I'd just like to add, in my conversations with many of the performers, and I'd just like to point out to our audience that we had our previous interview show with three of the performers, and one of the strongest themes that emerged from these discussions is that of trust. And that these performers clearly had a great trust in you, that this was a safe place for them to be able to articulate how they were feeling.
You're absolutely right, David. And we didn't really understand how important that was. When we first started reaching out, we started reaching out very quickly after this. And, you know, what we found was that a lot of the artists and performers, they were traumatized themselves. Right. And a lot of them were not creating in that moment. They were trying to, hunker down, protect themselves, and get together within themselves to strengthen their feeling of community. And, you know, we're making calls. And they were very open and talking very open with us about where they were and what they were feeling. But we didn't realize until much later that element of trust was the key. Their feeling was, if you were just reaching out to us now because it's timely and because it's, you know, now a hot topic, we never would have engaged. But we trusted.
Yeah. Well, can you tell us a little bit, walk us through the festival? This was a two-week festival of performance, of visual arts, of discussion. Can you just walk us through how you put this together?
Yes. Well, I would like to say that, you know, the We events that we did weekly, we had no idea how difficult it would be to do a weekly program of that complexity. So now we just decided to do almost daily programs of about the same complexity So we really testing our ability to do this, but I'll talk about the art side and maybe you can talk about the
Yeah, sure.
performance side. So for the art, we wanted it to be, there are three components basically: art, performance, and conversation, and all have equal importance. And so the art, we created a river of amplified voices, is what we called it. And we created, we bought these like 40 black lawn signs, and we offered it to the artists to do one side and get another artist in their community to do the other side. We did keep all of the art and performances to black artists, and that's one of the things that they said is, don't be afraid if you're going to call this amplify, amplify the voices of black artists. That's what we need right now, and we're not in a place of wanting to educate people. So we just
Right.
we gave out the signs, they came and picked it up, and then when they came, they took a blank one and replaced it with their art. And the art was really, it spanned all the emotions of what the artists were feeling. Everything from wanting beauty and love during this time to, feeling frustration and anger. It was everything. And we had them out along Weston Road for the whole 2 weeks of the festival, plus a little more.
And we can see these on your Facebook page
Yes,
still, right?
there's a video of Facebook, and these artists invited, we invited the artists that we knew, and they invited other artists. And another component of this, which is a component, became a component of the whole festival, was wanting to bring in the younger generation. And so we had people from, as young as high schoolers also be part of that. And we ended up with 20 different artwork, lined up along the,
In terms of performances, we had 8 performances in 9 days. We had a number of them created
Live.
specifically for the Amplify Festival here on the grounds. A number of them came during the day and created their work under the tree, and drew inspiration from that. And we took some archive performances from all of our previous Beechwood events. We had Shanna Melton, the poet, Kairi Jana, and Iyaba Mendingo. All of them did spoken word poetry performances.
And the reason they wanted to come and record under the tree, and the tree was part of what we offered as
Right.
resources,
Yes.
is because it has recently been aged at 400 years old, and slavery started 401 years ago, and they felt very connected to the tree, connected to their ancestors, and connected, like this tree has witnessed basically all these 400 years of this trauma.
And you've separately told me that actually Beechwood was a point on the Underground Railroad.
Yes, and that's another
Yeah.
thing that made them feel connected to the place as well as the concept of Beechwood. Yes, it was part of the Underground Railroad. There's a secret little door that goes down to the basement, still there.
A hidden door. We also had Tarishi Midnight Schuler, who's a performance poet. Alicia Cobb, who's a body painter, who's been at almost all of our events, painting live while the performances are happening in the music room, and she painted her human canvas brother Brian. We did we put together an archive performance of the Delphi dancers, who have been to Beechwood a number of times, and this particular performance of them dancing under the beech tree. The violist Amadi Azikiwe, who is also the conductor, artistic director of the Harlem Symphony, connected with him, and he sent a couple of performances. And then our good friend Tiffany Jackson, opera singer, who knew Janine's mother from her days at
In Yale.
Yale.
Wow.
And we reconnected many years after that, and she screened a incredible performance of her one-woman show, From the Hood to the Ivy League and Back, which was, we were fortunate enough to have gone to the live premiere in January, and that was one of the very first things that we thought when we started the ideas about the Amplify Festival, is how can we get Tiffany to possibly show this show, because it embodies so much of the themes that have come to the fore.
And that was, what, over an hour?
That was a two-plus-hour show.
We did two cornerstone events. One was on each of the Fridays, and hers was on Juneteenth. So that was pretty significant. And she has a number of things about slavery in her show. So, and then the other one was the big conversation at the end, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah. So I hear you have a couple of clips of the performances.
Yeah.
To share with us.
Yes.
What do you have?
So the first thing is a portion of Alicia and Brian Cobb's video that they call Skin. And you can't see the video, obviously, on the radio. This is a part where they are reciting, or Alicia is reciting a poem that she wrote as an overlay to the video of her brother being painted. And it's about...
I want to, before you play it, I want you to imagine that, and you can see this also, is it still on our Facebook?
I believe
it might be down, but I know
I think
you
we
can...
took it down because we're putting a website together, so I think we took the videos down just recently.
Right, but you could, people could see it, I know, on Alicia's Facebook page, Alicia Cobb, but she's painting basically her brother, what's under the skin. So as she's painting that, and as you can start to see the organs and his heart and ribs and things like that, she's reciting this this poem over that.
Skin. It is the largest organ of the human body, meant to act as a barrier, a protection against water loss, injury, toxins. Melanin is a brown pigment in the skin that creates beautiful brown hues and protects our skin from harm. Protects our skin from harm. Protects our skin from harm. Too bad it's not hate-proof, ignorant-proof, bulletproof. This is my skin, made up of black and white and rainbows, made up of love. This skin is that of the descendant of warriors, the kind that fought their way to freedom by biting off their master's nose. This skin is that of the descendant of weak white men who abused their power and oppressed an entire race. This skin is that of the descendant of war, a product of love that was not acceptable because of melanin. This skin is a beautiful shade of warm ivory in the winter and golden honey in the summer. This is my skin. This mulatto girl from another world who tried so hard to fit in. I am an inspiration, caring, purposeful, spiritual being, having a human experience. I deserve to breathe, to live, to thrive. My son deserves to breathe, to live, to thrive. My daughter deserves to breathe, to live, to thrive. My father deserves to breathe, to live, to thrive. My brothers deserve to breathe, to live, to thrive. My partner deserves to breathe, to live, to thrive. Black people deserve to breathe, to live, to thrive. Skin.
That was so powerful. I think we've discovered a new poet. She really, that's very moving.
Agreed. And with the painting going on at the same time, and they're under the tree, the big embrace of the Copper Beech, she's painting under there. So, yeah, it is amazing. Yeah, so those are
The second clip that we want to share is by Amadi Azikiwe, the violist. He recorded a piece by Coleridge Taylor Perkinson called Blues Forms. Coleridge Taylor Perkinson is a major black composer in the classical world. Amadi himself comes from a very long lineage of black musicians in the New York classical music scene, the New York Philharmonic at Juilliard. His mother was one of the first members of the New York Philharmonic, and went to New England Conservatory and Juilliard. So he contributed this piece. This is the first movement
And his
of
parents
Blues
all went to
Forms
school together with
with Martin
Martin
Luther
Luther King
King
and
and
Coretta.
Coretta.
Oh. They were, like college friends.
So
So
this
what's
is
the
the first movement of Blues Forms by Coleridge Taylor Perkinson, played by Amadi Azikiwe.
Thank you. How long is that piece?
There are four movements in
Mm-hmm.
that piece. It's like an 8, 9 minute piece
Right.
total.
Thank you. Well, just moving on, just to tie this up in terms of a record or documentation of the performances. I hear you're working on a compilation. Is that right?
Yes. So, you're talking about going forward with Amplify?
Yeah. Well, in terms of how people can see and hear.
Yeah. So we are definitely we have something up about the art. We're working on a compilation of the performances and also taking the conversation because we had after each performance we had a conversation with the artists and we also had a very big conversation at the end with all of the participants plus some people that were invited you being one of them and we and also some younger people from the younger generation which everyone has a lot of hope in and so that conversation, we are also compiling a whole thematic edit of that. And this is to be passed on. We're trying to help keep this Amplify Festival moving to other
Right.
venues and organizations and towns because it really helped to bring some understanding.
Right.
To different communities. And so we've had a lot of interest in that. And so that's really where our focus is now, not necessarily posting it all online, but actually
Moving
bringing
it forward.
it out and moving it forward and bringing it out in a different way.
So let's talk a little bit about that discussion that you had. There were discussions. You interviewed the performers after the events, but then there was also a single longer discussion with most of the performers. Is that right?
Yes, almost all the performers. The ones that couldn't make it for the whole time of the conversation, because it was almost 2 hours, they were listening in. They just were not up on the Zoom screen, but they were typing some things. But almost all of the performers, plus other people that they brought in, mostly younger people. That's what everything we did. We went to the participants and we said, how do you want this to go down? And one of the things they wanted to do is invite younger people from the younger generation, because that's where the hope was.
Well, tell us a little more about the shape of the discussion. I gather that there were some surprises. It went in directions that you couldn't have foretold.
Yeah, well, first of all, we invited one of our Beechwood friends, Frederick Johnson, who's an amazing jazz singer, and also...
He's worked with all the greats.
He worked with all the greats, B.B. King, Aretha Franklin. he lives in Florida, but he's been here a number of times, and we talked with him, and knowing that he is also... a healer and facilitator. He's worked with communities in strife through music, bringing together Israelis and Palestinians, for example, working in Memphis, bringing the police department with the local community through a program and a process that he calls Voicing the Heart.
Uh-huh.
And people who've come to Beechwood to see him have experienced this, because what he's done at Beechwood is people call out associations with certain themes, and he collects a group of words, and then with Daniel Kelly, who's a longtime pianist collaborator, they do a kind of mind meld, and then he creates a song on the spot, accompanied by Daniel, and he sings it. And not only is the song amazing and relevant because it has all the words that the audience put in there, but it's so compelling that the audience is singing along as if they've heard this song their whole lives.
No, I can understand that as a form of healing, that he takes in all of this input and is able to somehow, again, like a crucible, create something very...
And through the lens of the arts. Yeah. And he was our host for this conversation, introducing it with music, getting everybody on the same page. And then we heard voice after voice of the artists and the participants with their experience.
But I think that you said there are surprises. The interesting thing is that we had all of the things that came out during the conversation, we had already heard in talking to the participants. But what didn't occur to us is that they had not all been together to share those same thoughts with each other. And that was a very compelling thing for them, to be all of them together, seeing each other and having just participated in this this artistic conversation around the issues. And so then Frederick Johnson himself is Black. And so basically, rather than really facilitating, he was engaging along with everyone. And a lot of the things that have been on everyone's mind are what came out. And at the end, I think Fred thought, I'm not going to put together a song now with this. That's not, because it was a very intense conversation about all kinds of themes related to Black Lives Matter issues, related to how they're feeling, related to frustrations, related to resilience, all kinds of things. And it was very real and very rich. Mm-hmm. And so he just didn't feel like summarizing that hour and a half conversation with all the complexity in a song was appropriate. He did send one, though. He did do one, and he sent it to us afterwards, and that will be part of the compilation that we present.
Right. I think you gathered a couple of clips from that discussion, from some moments from that discussion.
And before we play that, I just want to say that there were a lot of themes that came out of this, and you know, the fact that this is actually, while it might be very topical now from the latest incident, this is a, you know, relentlessly been going on for 400 years,
right?
All kinds of different ways, and that there's just a need for some basic humanity. We had a, you know, Shauna Melton said, I've been a kindergarten teacher for years, and the first thing we teach kids on the first day is be kind to each other. Treat each other with kindness, like everyone deserves that. And she said, you know, just like we could go back to that alone.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of other things, linking back to ancestors and honoring ancestors gives a lot of strength. But this first clip that we're going to play is from Tiffany Jackson. It's a short clip, but it really speaks well to a subject that came out in the conversations, that people said, in spite of all of this, our ancestors were incredibly resilient. Mm-hmm. And we, as a people, can still manage to seek and find love and those kinds of things in the midst of this huge and relentless and everyday trauma. So this is something that Tiffany said that we thought would be a nice, is this work?
Sure.
It's okay. Here it goes. Tiffany Jackson about resilience.
As a girl who was raised and born to a sharecropper's daughter, that I'm grateful that my mother did not teach me to hate. My mother, she could have. She grew up in Jim Crow South in Titus, Alabama. So if she had have allowed how she was treated to sort of transmit to her children, then I would be a different woman today. So I honor my mother for teaching me to love despite what and how she was treated. And it has caused me to have a more open heart in teaching and mentoring as I do today.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that was Tiffany. You know, and even though we had heard some of these things, I would say doing the festival, I mean, Frederick, you were...
Yeah, I mean, all of this brought it so to life and made it so personal. I was crying every day, literally every day during the festival, just hearing these stories told by people who I know. But the story was not something that just comes out in conversation. We had to go looking for the story that was there. They were living the story, but they, you know, it's not something that you just go out and share with people. Through the lens of the art and the arts process and performing, this was legitimate to bring up, and it struck me to the core.
We have time just for one other clip that you have.
Yeah. So this one is about, you know, raising Black children, and you know, everyone hears, oh, about the talk. Well, it's not the talk. It's an everyday, every minute experience. And so these are just three: Iyaba Mandingo,
Krista Forrest,
and Alicia Cobb. They each speak to this. So that's what we're going to play right now.
You guys are parents, so you know, just know there's not a more helpless feeling than feeling like you can't protect your child. Sack your woman at 18 years old and have such, be so proud of herself already. And to think that that could be a dangerous quality. This is something I taught him when he was a boy, all of them. And when you get stopped by a car, even when you were walking, because they did that when they were walking in the playground. ID, put it on the dashboard. registration, license, insurance, put them all on the dashboard, turn all the lights on. By the time the cop comes and knocks on your window, have your hands on the steering wheel and looking up at him, smiling and saying, "Good afternoon, officer, ma'am, sir, how can I help you?" All the information is right there. I put it right in, reaching it right in, so you can reach it and grab it if you need it. I'm just going to keep my hands right here, sir. During chattel slavery, this is what mothers did to their children, especially to their sons. They would break them first, because they knew that if they let the slave master break them, sometimes he would kill them or maim them. So they would literally break. So I remember my mother telling me not to look white people in their eye. And I was born in 1969.
In life, but I have black children. I have a son that's 25. I have a daughter that is 19. And I worry about them every day. Worry for my son. He walks to work every day in Darien. I'm not worried about him getting robbed, but I am definitely worried about him getting pulled over. So it puts tears in my eyes when someone his age, when it happens to someone his age, because it really hits me hard, and I'm sure it does everyone else that has young sons. It's tough.
I'm scared for my son more than anything, because my son is a black man in America. He's 19 years old. He's 6 feet tall. He sports a huge afro and walks, late nights with his friends, and told me a story a couple days ago about being stopped by the police, which made my entire chest just tighten.
Well, thank you. Again, very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. To hear that. So we just have 3 minutes left. Can you just tell us a little bit about what you want, how you are going to move this forward? You say you are creating a compilation that you can use in a new way.
Yes, well, we just met with the participants because, again, we want them to drive the narrative. That's
yes.
The whole purpose of this.
Uh-huh.
And we've had some arts organizations, some libraries, some galleries that are interested in doing something with this. We'd like it to keep it together as a package with art, performances, and the conversation. But we would like, wherever it goes, to be a place where they will get other artists to add to this art and get other performers to add to these performances and have conversations. So we're going to think about providing a process for the conversations as well, and use the themes that came out of that last big conversation, use those themes and some clips to drive those conversations. But, we did not plan. One, we didn't plan on doing this. Two, we definitely didn't plan nor have the resources to do what it takes to really get this to be a mobile thing that moves around. It requires creating, posters out of the artwork. It requires really doing an Amplify website so that all these places that take it on can continue to add their content, because that's really where the power is going to be.
So it's really going to be a partnership. You're looking...
A partnership, and we have to figure out a way to get some funds, either through grants or through each of the participating organizations contributing something, not only to get the resources for us to be able to do it, but also to make sure that the original artists and performers also, get something for what they've put in to start this, because they really jumped in and trusted from the beginning.
So
that's what we're working out now. So if anyone's listening and you have some good funding for us, please let us know.
And what's the best place for people to find out what's happening? Is it your Facebook page?
Facebook page is always a good place. If you go and like and follow, you'll get all the notifications of our posts. We do a lot of communicating there. One can also go to beachwoodarts.org. And our website has a contact page where you can sign up. We send very detailed newsletters every once in a while when we announce our seasons and when there are special events that are only for people who follow. So this is a way.
The newsletter is a good way, I think, to get.
Well, I'm so sorry that we're out of time. There's still a lot, I think, to discuss, especially about the future of Beechwood and the impact of this extraordinary festival. I wish you the best of luck in terms of working and working with others to continue this amazing work. So Frederick and Janine, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us. And thank you, David, for all the support you gave during it as well.
Yes.
This is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County. You've been listening to our August edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly interview show on WPKN 89.5 FM. Today we were talking with Janine Esposito and Frederick Chu, co-founders of Beechwood Arts and Innovation of Westport. Our focus today was on the Amplify series, a two-week festival celebrating and amplifying the voices of Black artists and performers that Beechwood produced over the last 2 weeks of June this year. If you missed part of the broadcast or just want to hear it again, you can hear the show on WPKN Podcasts on SoundCloud. I'm David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County. Please tune in on Monday, September the 14th for the next edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture.